Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hello folks, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, the release date of this show is March 15th, and that means it's time now for another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I am your practical, everyday guy, self-righteous host. Yeah, at least that's one of the comments I recently got, that I'm self-righteous. Okay, I will do my best not to be that way. This week, or this episode actually, I've got a couple of topic matters that I want to discuss with you. One of them is a private lesson that I recently taught. And I decided to get back into teaching again a little bit. I took a long enough sabbatical to kind of sharpen my skills. I'm still working on that. Most of my time this year is going to be on sharpening my skills. Like, by the time you hear this, I'll be at the Tactical Conference in the Little Rock, Arkansas area, the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. And then the second subject matter that you're going to be hearing about is a carbine and pistol competition match that I recently shot in, and got some good observations from both of these experiences. You'll be hearing about those shortly. I do want to mention that this show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions. I love Concealment Solutions holsters. I have been using them for years, so I'm not just saying this because they pay me to do so. Although in full disclosure, I do get paid from Concealment Solutions, and I'm a user though. I have been using them long before they sponsored this podcast. Terrific holsters. If you buy from them, use the coupon code HandgunWorld. That's all one word, HandgunWorld, at checkout, and you get a 10% discount. Now, I'm also sponsored by The Law of Self-Defense. Andrew Branca, the author of a great book, The Law of Self-Defense. He teaches a lot of classes. He sells a lot of videos, I believe, and things like that. Excellent stuff. I believe that you are going to really enjoy these two Case of the Week episodes coming up right here in this show, on this episode. Real good stuff. Things you need to know about the law of self-defense, the legal implications if you have to use your firearm. And you can get a great discount. If you're going to buy Andrew's products or go to his classes, please use the affiliate link that he talks about, and also it's in the show notes. That way you're going to be helping to support the Handgun World Podcast. Okay, from the Handgun World mobile studio, we'll get into segment number one about my recent competition match. Stay tuned. Okay, this segment comes from the Handgun World mobile studio. My 2006 Toyota 4Runner Sport Edition V8 paid off. Yeah, luxury ride here. First time I've had a truck type of a vehicle in many years. I was driving those two Honda Accords for a while. It's good to be back into a truck. I mean, this is not a real truck, I understand. It's an SUV, but you know what? Toyotas are one of the few... The 4Runners are one of the few vehicles, few SUVs, that are actually a body on frame and a rear-wheel drive. So they're not one of those crossover vehicles. And I like this. Kind of, it's built on a truck, small truck frame. Okay, anyway, this is not about trucks. This is about... Just went to a carbine match, an IDPA-style carbine match at Cedar Ridge Range, right outside of San Antonio. Ben Branham and I did some more competition shooting this weekend, or this past weekend, and I guess today is the 3rd of March. You're not going to hear this for about 12 days till the podcast releases. I had loads of fun. I shot both carbine and pistol. I sucked today, folks. My shooting was awful. Ugh. But I had fun. See, it's possible to go and shoot bad and have fun. It's all your mental attitude. You know, it's all your attitude. Again, I'm trying to get better, and I've made an observation today that I'm going to share with you in a little while. But let me tell you what I shot. I have a primary weapon system, 14-inch piston-driven AR upper with a couple of inches of flash suppressor or flash hider, whatever, permanently attached to the upper, so it's a legal gun. I didn't have to get an SBR to buy it. I believe it's the MK-114 made by Primary Weapon Systems. That's my upper. And then my lower is a Palmetto State Armory. And that's it. I just bolted the two together, bought them separately, bolted them together. I love that thing. Love that thing. It was flawless today. Of course, only about 100 rounds. I have had a couple of malfunctions with this gun. I've shot it probably 500 or 600 rounds total. This AR M4 style semi-automatic non-evil weapon. And see, this is what good guys do with AR-15s. They compete. It's a sporting rifle. It's a sporting gun. Shooting is a sport. Shooting sports. It's very big. It's very popular. People hunt with AR-15s. In some circumstances, they make very good hunting rifles because they're easy to shoot. We had a 12-year-old girl today shooting with us, and she was shooting an AR, and she was doing very well. Okay, she wasn't on our squad, but she was at the match. Very impressed. I was very impressed. So, good people can get together and do good things with AR-15 style rifles. Oh, and by the way, good people like Mr. Williford in Sutherland Springs, Texas, used an AR-15 to stop the church shooter in Texas. Why isn't everybody making a huge deal about that? Interesting. It's kind of sad, actually, that that's what our society is. When good people do good things, nobody wants to talk about it. But when bad people do bad things, oh, we got to talk about it. We got to spread it all over. It's got to be news for the next 3 weeks. And that's all we're going to talk about. And that's all the politicians are going to talk about. Because, you know, the country has no other problems except for school shooters, right? That's the only problem that we have. Give me a break. Ah, okay. I'm going to make sure that I stay humble here. Don't get on my soapbox, Bob. So just kind of keep it real, Bob. Come on. But this stage, I mean, this whole match was fun because I shot my carbine and I shot a pistol. So I got to shoot every stage twice. Once with a carbine, once with a pistol. Shot a Glock 34 today. And I just made a lot of mental errors. Really, that's what it was. A lot of mental errors. I've shot both guns a whole lot better. And I don't know what it is. Mentally, I just can't seem to get my head into competition shooting, and I don't know why, because I've been a lot better than this in the past. A lot better. And I'm going to have to think about what's going on with me. What's happening? What's going on with my head? Why am I making mental errors? Not safety errors. Not at all. Just shooting errors. And I'm kind of in one of those funks, but I'll get out of it. I know that. Fun match. Great match. I'm sure Ben beat me, but that's okay, because I'm a lot older than Ben. So I have old man syndrome, Ben. I know you're listening, and you know, you're a young pup. You should beat an old man like me. Come on. I can't be that fast. See, I'm coming up with all the excuses. It's not me. It's not the bad shooting. It's all the excuses. You know, have you noticed that excuses for shooting bad, it's almost like excuses for golfing bad. Golfers and shooters, they seem to have about the same amount of excuses. Have you ever noticed that? I used to be a golfer back in the day, so I know all the excuses in the book. that golfers use. And I know all the excuses that shooters use. So I had a bunch of them today. It definitely was the gun. It definitely was the ammo. It definitely was, you know, probably the trigger. Maybe it was my optic on my AR. That's probably the problem. It was my optic. Yeah, that's what it is. Or it's the magazines, or it's the ammunition. All those contributed to my poor shooting today. My guns are not very accurate. I need to go buy a new gun. I do, because my guns are not very accurate. I mean, you know, I mean, primary weapon systems. It's crap, right? It's actually some of the best that you can buy right now for in the AR market, I think. And, you know, Glock 34, I mean, what a piece of junk. I mean, you know, guys like Bob Vogel and Dave Savigny have won national shooting championships with a Glock 34. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything. It's got to be the gun. It's these inaccurate guns that I'm shooting. That's why I didn't get it done today. You see what kind of excuses a lot of us make? And we justify going out and buying a new gun because we go out and we shoot poorly with one gun. It's the knucklehead pulling the trigger. I have excellent guns. I have excellent, accurate guns that are all a lot more accurate than I can shoot. And I even had a stage today where I forgot to shoot a target. That's definitely not the gun's fault. It's all a mental game. And this is one reason why I like to go out and compete, is because you get to be put under the mental stress similar to a self-defense gun use. Not the same. Definitely not the same stress. But at least it's more stress than going to the range and standing there and plinking away, which is probably what 90% of gun owners actually do. And in my opinion, that's definitely not training. It's definitely not even practicing. That's turning money into noise. Turning money, good hard-earned money that you spend on ammunition and stand there at the range, standing perfectly still with a perfect sight picture and gently squeezing off around and doing that 10 to 15 times each time that you do it and shooting that nice, perfect little, you know, half dollar size group, right? Or even dime size group. And that's what people strive to do, and that's what a lot of them do. And of course, some of them don't even get that great of groups, but they say, oh, well, you know, it's on paper. Look at that. It's on paper. Yeah, sure, it's on paper. Is that what the bad guy's going to allow you to do? Stand there, get the perfect stance, get the perfect grip, take about 15 to 20 seconds to do that, have a very perfect trigger pull, nice and slow trigger pull, so that it... Yeah, I mean, this is all good stuff when you're first learning, when you're brand new. Yes, these fundamentals I just mentioned, those are a must. You have to get those. You have to get those dialed in. You have to get good at those. But once you're fairly proficient at that, please don't buy 5 boxes of ammunition, which is about 250 rounds every year, and go out plinking and standing there at a square public range a few times a year and think that you're ready to defend yourself. Because I have to say, you're likely not. Now, before I get email, well, Bob, you know what? There's a lot of defensive gun uses out there by untrained, unskilled gun owners, and they won. They won the gunfight. They stopped the bad guy. The bad guy quit doing what he was doing, and it worked out well. Yes, those examples are out there. And we know that the mere fact that you have a gun and you're willing to use it and you introduce the gun into the fight if there's no other choice. Again, no other choice. If you can't de-escalate it, you got to introduce the gun. Sometimes that alone will end the encounter. You don't even have to fire a shot. Going to competition matches and training classes. And those two great things is that you get to practice and shoot in scenarios that you don't normally get to do when you go to just a public range. And you get put under the stress, you get put under the mental stress called a shot timer. And there's something about when that shot timer goes off, our brains seem to go off as well. They turn off. At least that's what happened to me today. Shot timer goes off, brain turns off. But, you know, that, you have to think about it. That is what might happen to you if you're in a real self-defense gun use. Someone's pointing a gun at you, or they got a knife, or they have some big, huge object that they want to try to beat you silly and beat you to death with. That's a stressful event. Okay, the other excellent thing about doing competition and training classes, they're so much fun. I mean, they're really fun. It's a sport, so if you want to go and play the game, you can. If you go to a training class, if you go to a self-defense class like the one that Ben and I have coming up, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, coming up June 23rd and June 24th. Yes, I mentioned that earlier in the show. That's an intermediate level class. Yeah, those are also fun. They're great. They're a really, really good time. Lots of fun, lots of good camaraderie with other like-minded, patriotic people who believe in freedom, who believe strongly that they have a God-given right to own a firearm, to keep and bear arms, and that it's not only about self-defense, it's about preserving freedom. You get to be with people like this when you go to competition matches, or you go to defensive handgun or even defensive rifle and shotgun classes. So those are the two great things. It's worth it. It's worth, if you have to save money, save money to do it. If you got to sell a gun you don't use much to be able to afford to go to a class, do that stuff. If it's a gun you're not using much, why are you letting that money sit in your safe? If you don't use it, if you don't like it, get rid of it. Take that money and bring the gun that you do like, that you do carry all the time. Go to competition. Go to IDPA. Go to USPSA matches. Shoot it. Take your carbine or your AR or whatever gun that you own and go to a rifle match. Sign up for a class. Even if it's nothing more than a 3-hour private lesson. I'm teaching a 3-hour private lesson tomorrow. And, of course, you know, by the time you hear this, it was last week. But I'm teaching a private lesson tomorrow, 3 hours. Beginners, a husband and wife team, they're brand new. They're beginners. They're people that I know here in the San Antonio area. And even though I've kind of taken a little bit of a break from teaching, I decided to kind of end that break by doing a private lesson and, of course, teaching the class in June, getting back together with Ben again to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. But I've still got a strong commitment, like I said at the beginning of this year, to focus on bettering myself as a shooter. I cannot seem to get out of this slump, but I will. I'll get out of the slump. But it's great that, you know, beginners are going to take a private lesson. And I think it's awesome. You know, it's one of my favorite things to do is to teach new shooters. It's one of my real favorite things to do because I know that, you know, they're interested, they want to learn, how to defend themselves better with this piece of equipment, this life-saving equipment that they own called a handgun. And they know that personal responsibility and knowing how to use it properly and not be careless with it, they know that that's important. So they spend their hard-earned money, give it to me, and I got to deliver. I got to give them a good beginner's class that's going to bring them from pretty much not knowing much at all, or at least one of them doesn't know much at all about shooting, hopefully by the end of the day, she will be very good at being comfortable with her gun and being able to place hits on target reasonably accurate. I don't expect her to shoot quarter-size groups at 10 yards by the end of the lesson. I just expect her to be safe and to make some fairly decent hits and teach her about how to use this tool that she has. And again, she's coming with her husband, so I think that's going to be, you know, it's great. It's great that, here's what I like. A husband and wife are coming to me to get a private lesson instead of one of them trying to teach the other. Instead of the husband trying to teach the wife, which usually doesn't work out very well. They hired a third party, in this case me, and that's who's going to be teaching both of them. I strongly suggest that that's what you do. Get a third party. Please don't try to teach family members. It often doesn't work too well. So, okay, I just got home. That's it for this segment. Thoughts after a carbine and pistol competition match. I'll be right back.
Greetings, Handgun World Podcast, and thanks for having me on to share the Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca. This content is provided for general educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice. If you are in need of legal advice, you must consult with competent legal counsel licensed to practice in the relevant jurisdiction. This week's Case of the Week, State v. Oates, comes out of the Missouri Supreme Court in a decision handed down February 13, 2018. It involves a case in which prosecutors carefully selected a criminal charge for which the legal defense of self-defense would not be permitted. That's right, prosecutors can do that if the facts of the case allow, in which case, self-defense is taken off the table as a legal defense. Once again, this appellate decision does not involve good guys like us. In this case, it involves a marijuana dealer and his customers. But always remember that the appellate case law created from cases involving genuine criminals is exactly the same case law that will be applied to us. Here, in this case, the defendant, Oates, was engaged in a transaction to sell marijuana to two people who would ultimately be the victims in this case. By victims, of course, I mean the victims of the defendant's use of force. The victims were in a parked car, and the defendant leaned in the driver's side window and handed them a plastic storage container full of marijuana for them to inspect. Then the victim driving the car stepped on the gas pedal. The defendant caught halfway in the moving vehicle, lunged into the vehicle, and fell into the back seat. There, the defendant shot and killed both of the victims. The defendant was charged with two counts of second-degree murder and also two counts of felony murder. For those who don't know, a person commits felony murder if they commit any underlying felony and in the perpetration of that felony, another person dies as a result of the perpetration of that felony. The underlying felony in this case was the drug transaction. Importantly, in the context of this case, you need to understand that the underlying felony required for felony murder need not be a felony that involves the intentional use of force. Indeed, the person charged with the felony murder need not have been using any force at all. For example, imagine that Bob and Joe rob a convenience store, with Bob wielding the gun inside the store and Joe collaborating by staying out in the car as the getaway driver. And during the robbery, Bob shoots and kills the store clerk. Bob, as the actual user of force, is arguably guilty of straight-up murder of the clerk. Joe, out in the getaway car, who did not himself use force against the clerk, would not be guilty of straight-up murder, but is arguably guilty of felony murder. The death occurred in the course of Joe committing an underlying felony, the aiding and abetting of the armed robbery. In fact, imagine that Bob's gun was fake, and when he committed the robbery, he did not shoot and kill the clerk, but the clerk shot and killed him. Clearly, the clerk is not guilty of murder. He was acting in self-defense. But Joe, out in the car, can nevertheless be guilty of felony murder because somebody, in this case, his collaborator, Bob, was killed in the perpetration of a felony in which Joe was taking part, that robbery. All this, even though neither Joe nor Bob in the second scenario used any force against anybody. Now, the drug-dealing defendant in this case requested the trial judge to give a self-defense jury instruction in his case, arguing that he shot the two victims out of fear that they were going to kill him. The judge agreed to the self-defense jury instruction in part. The judge agreed to the self-defense jury instruction for the two murder charges against the defendant, but not for the two felony murder charges against the defendant. In other words, the jury was told that they could acquit the defendant of the murder charges on the basis of self-defense, but they could not acquit the defendant of the felony murder charges on the basis of self-defense. Sure enough, the jury acquitted the defendant of the two counts of murder, but convicted him on the two counts of felony murder. Now, the defendant appealed his conviction on the grounds that the trial judge should have instructed the jury that self-defense was relevant to the felony murder charges as well as the murder charges. The Court of Appeals confirmed his conviction, and the defendant then appealed to the Missouri Supreme Court, where we are now. The Missouri Supreme Court opinion notes that self-defense is a legal defense applicable to any criminal charge based on the intentional use of force against another. Indeed, it is a legal defense only to a criminal charge based on the intentional use of force against another. Self-defense was an appropriate legal defense to the criminal charges of murder in this case, because murder requires intent to use deadly force against another person. And it was correct for the trial judge to instruct the jury on self-defense with respect to the murder charges. However, felony murder is not necessarily based on the intentional use of force against another. If the underlying felony was not one that involved the intentional use of force, then the legal defense of self-defense is not relevant. Here, the basis of the defendant's felony murder charge was not his use of force against the victims. It was based on his commission of the drug felony as the felony underlying the felony murder charge. Because dealing marijuana does not inherently involve the use of force, self-defense is not a legal defense to a charge of felony murder based on the underlying felony of dealing marijuana. Therefore, the trial judge is correct to not instruct a jury to consider self-defense as a defense to felony murder. And the Missouri Supreme Court here affirmed the defendant's convictions. As always, we do encourage you to read the case in its entirety, and you can find that case, State v. Oates, on our Patreon page at patreon.com/lawofselfdefense. If you'd like to read the full text of this appellate decision, and we always encourage you to do so, you can find it linked at our Patreon page at patreon.com/lawofselfdefense. That's it for our case of the week. Keep in mind, the Handgun World podcast audience can always get 10% off everything at lawofselfdefense.com simply by pointing your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld or by using the discount code handgunworld at checkout. Remember, you carry a gun so you're hard to kill, know the law so you're hard to convict. Until next time, I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com.
Thank you, Andrew. Interesting stuff there. And this next Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week episode that is about to play here in just a moment, when I listened to it, I thought, wow, you know, it's interesting how people can make conflicting claims at the same time when they are putting out a defense of their own actions. It's interesting, but I think you're going to find it interesting how this case turns out. And please don't forget, Ben Branham has some classes coming up in the San Antonio area. I'm teaching with him in June, June 23rd and June 24th in San Antonio. We are going to team up again together and teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, our signature two-day class. Don't miss it if you've never had a class like that. I'm really excited about doing it. Ben's got some other classes coming up. Check it out. John Payne from Suarez International also has a shotgun class coming out the middle of April. So that's also in San Antonio. He's going to be teaching that class. check out the links in the show notes right now to get signed up for those. Love to see you at both of those classes. Okay, another case of the week with Andrew Branca from Law of Self-Defense.
Thanks, Handgun World, for having me back on for another Law of Self-Defense case of the week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca with lawofselfdefense.com. This case of the week is provided for educational purposes only. If you are in need of legal advice, you must consult with an attorney in the relevant jurisdiction. This week's case of the week comes out of the Arizona Supreme Court in a decision handed down February 27, 2018 that reverses decades of Arizona self-defense law. That case is State v. Carson. Now, the core of this case is a question that illustrates a collision between common sense and what I optimistically call legal reasoning. And that is the question of whether someone can simultaneously argue, I did not shoot that person, you caught the wrong guy, and at the same time argue, I did it in self-defense. Traditionally, the legal defense of self-defense effectively, at least implicitly, requires a confession of sorts. In fact, it's often referred to as a defense of confession and avoidance. You're not denying that you used force against that person. You're confessing that you did. It was you, but you're avoiding criminal liability because you're claiming the legal justification of self-defense. And traditionally, if you deny that it was you, you can't simultaneously claim self-defense, and that, in fact, has been the law in Arizona for many, many decades. If you deny you did it, if you deny you fired that shot, you can't justify the shot as self-defense because self-defense is a deliberate act. You identified a threat. You used force to neutralize that threat. There are a slew of Arizona appellate court decisions that reinforce this legal doctrine. Just a few examples here are State v. Plew out of the Arizona Supreme Court in 1986, quote, a defendant who denies shooting the victim may not thereafter claim self-defense, close quote. State v. Williams, Arizona Supreme Court, 1982, quote, simple logic demands that a defendant who disclaims the assaulter's behavior is not entitled to a self-defense instruction. State v. Gilfillan, Arizona Court of Appeals, 2000, quote, given that the defendant denied committing the act with which he was charged, it follows that he could not argue self-defense, close quote. So all of this affirms that if you deny it was you, you can't also ask that the jury be instructed on self-defense. Self-defense is off the table until this case in Arizona, State v. Carson. Now, Carson was essentially involved in a street brawl in which a couple of people were shot to death and another was injured by gunfire, and he was identified by witnesses as a suspect. So he was arrested, he was charged with two counts of murder and aggravated assault. And at his trial, his principal defense was, it wasn't me. You caught the wrong guy. I was someplace else. I had nothing to do with this. And then, when it was time to discuss the jury instructions at the end of the trial, just before the jury goes into deliberations, his defense lawyer asked that the jury also be instructed on self-defense. And the trial judge said, I'm not going to do that. Arizona law is very clear on this. Your client's been arguing the whole trial it wasn't him. If you argue it wasn't you, you can't also argue self-defense. So the jury did not receive the jury instruction. They ended up finding Carson guilty on both counts of murder and the aggravated assault charge. And he appeals that up to the Arizona Supreme Court, which makes this remarkable decision. The Arizona Supreme Court notes that, for many years, the Arizona courts have stated that a defendant can't simultaneously deny they did it and claim self-defense, citing many of the cases that I just quoted a few moments ago. But then they ruled, we now disavow these holdings, and they throw decades of Arizona law right out the window. The new standard in Arizona is even if you deny it was you, you claim you didn't fire those shots, you had nothing to do with it, if there's also any more than zero evidence that could potentially support a legal argument of self-defense, you are entitled to that self-defense jury instruction. So you are now, under Arizona law, permitted to make these inconsistent defenses, entitled to that self-defense jury instruction, so more as there is more than zero evidence to support the self-defense jury instruction. More than zero means the slightest evidence, a tiny bit. Almost anything will be sufficient. So this is quite a remarkable change in Arizona law. Now, I will say, in my experience, that if you're on trial for a use of force, especially a killing, and you're trying to convince the jury that you only committed this act, took that life out of necessary self-defense, and you're simultaneously making inconsistent defenses, it doesn't fly with a human jury. They want to know why this death had to happen, why this person had to die. And if they had to die because they compelled you to use deadly force against them in lawful self-defense, well, that's fine. That's an acquittal. But if you start telling them inconsistent stories about why this had to happen, even to the point of denying that you had anything to do with it while you're arguing self-defense, it just does not fly. They tend not to believe any of the inconsistent defenses that you're presenting. For more in-depth analysis of this decision, for a limited time, you can download our free expert report at lawofselfdefense.com/AZ report. If you enjoy this content, I invite you to join us for the Law of Self-Defense live show every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's totally free to either participate live or to watch the recording after each show. For more information, point your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/show. Remember, as a listener to this podcast, you can save 10% on pretty much everything we do at lawofselfdefense.com, including our books, DVDs, online classes, live classes, and more. Just point your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld or use the discount code handgunworld at checkout. I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com.
Okay, once again back in the Handgun World mobile studio on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, 72 degrees, partly sunny, early March in San Antonio, Texas. Gotta love South Texas spring time. It's fabulous here. You know, we're going to have our share of hot weather coming up, but it's probably going to be a couple of months away. This is why I live here. It's for days like this, this time of the year. Most of you know I am really a Yankee. I'm from Wisconsin. A damn Yankee, as they say, because a Yankee comes to visit, but a damn Yankee comes to stay. That's me. I came to stay. I'm such a damn Yankee. All right. Anyway, I just got done teaching a couple of new shooters. Well, relatively new shooters. A man and his wife wanted a private lesson, and so I just got done working with them. I made some observations. The lady had not shot very much before. I mean, she's not a brand new shooter. She has shot her pistol. But I asked her what she wanted to accomplish. She said she wanted to be able to learn how to do a better job of defending herself with it. So starting from pretty much the basics, I helped her do that. And helped her husband get sharpened up on his skills as well. We didn't do any drawing from the holster. If I have beginners, we don't do that normally in a beginning class unless it's like a two-day beginning class. This was a three-hour private lesson. I'll do three-hour private lessons. I'll do them locally. If some of you are in South or Central Texas and you want a private lesson, or you know somebody that down here that wants one, let me know. I'll do them either basic or intermediate or even advanced private lessons. You know, I decided not to do traveling classes this year. Maybe I might put one up later in the fall. Ben and I might go out on the road. Ben's got a couple classes coming up that he is doing out on the road. We have one we're teaching right here in San Antonio, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, June 23rd and 24th. Okay, some observations. She did very well with the Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. She did not quite so well with her husband's Walther PPS M2. I happen to like the Walther PPS M2 quite a bit, but I carry the Shield a whole lot more. I really like the Shield, especially my M&P Shield 2.0. And as you know, most of this year, I'm going to be shooting two M&Ps. My M&P 2.0 Compact, which, wow, what a sweet gun, and my M&P Shield 2.0. This M&P 2.0 Compact just might get me to switch from my Glock 19. It just might. It really might. It's that good. I can control the gun even better than a Glock 19. I think the recoil is softer. It's every bit as accurate. The trigger is better. I think the texture is a little too rough, but that can be remedied. If the texture is too rough for you, it's fairly easy to smooth it out. And what I'm going to try to do pretty soon is buy some extra back straps for the M&P 2.0 Compact. And I'm going to buy one or two extra back straps, probably the medium size, and I'm going to sand one of them down and then put it back on the gun, see how it feels with just the back strap and the palm swells sanded down, but not sanding down the front strap of the pistol. That'll probably be a pretty good feel for me. Again, I rarely ever carry the gun touching my bare skin. I've 95% of the time I have a light t-shirt, even if it's a tank top t-shirt. Even when the weather is blistering hot here in Texas, I still have a tank top t-shirt on. So that texture is usually not a problem for me when I'm carrying it, and it's excellent when I'm shooting the gun. Really adds to the controllability. Now, this lady had the version 1 shield, and she had the version 1 shield pistol with a thumb safety. Here's what I learned. For new shooters, most of the time, it's very difficult to disengage the thumb safety and do it quickly and efficiently. This was no exception. This lady had a hard time disengaging the thumb safety, so I just told her to use the pistol without the safety engaged. Keep it disengaged all the time. Frankly, my personal opinion, I don't think a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, I don't think that gun needs a thumb safety. It's like about a 6 to 7 pound trigger press. You don't need a thumb safety if you have a trigger press 6 to 7 pounds and you're properly trained and you carry it in a good holster. I think that's something that gets in the way. I think it could be dangerous. Again, I think it could be dangerous with the thumb safety. Why, Bob? Why is it dangerous with a thumb safety? Where do you get that from? Where I get that from is if you cannot disengage that safety quick enough in a self-defense gunfight, it could be dangerous. You could get shot, stabbed, beaten, or whatever. In the couple seconds that it might take you to fumble around with the gun and get rid of that safety and disengage that safety. You know, keep in mind, things happen very, very quickly in a self-defense encounter. Very quickly. So unless you've really practiced thousands and thousands of times and you can disengage that thumb safety, I would get the shield without a thumb safety if I were you. And I recommended that if she's going to keep that gun, that she keep the safety disengaged. Now, I'm not talking about 1911 style pistols. That's a whole different story. 1911s have a very intuitive, relatively easy to disengage thumb safety, and if you train and you train well, you can do it with ease, you can do it effortlessly, you can make it part of your draw stroke, and you can defend yourself very easily and quickly and efficiently with a 1911 or a 1911 style pistol. I just don't think a double action or safe action or whatever kind of action you want to call the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, I don't think that needs to have a thumb safety. When they very first came out, they came out with safe thumb safeties. Okay, so I got her realizing that. I worked a lot with her on grip and also with her husband on some grip and some trigger control. I'm a firm believer in grip. I'm a firm believer that a proper grip is probably as important as a good trigger pull. Not more important, but I think it's as important. If you have a bad grip on the gun that does not allow you to control it, I think your accuracy suffers. And you have to be able to properly control the pistol, especially if you're shooting defensive ammunition, which is loaded a lot hotter than range ammo. It's going to recoil more. It's going to make the gun a little bit more difficult to control than when you're at the range. It's so important to have a good, proper grip. It's so important to have a good, strong grip on the gun, almost like you're choking the gun, almost like you're choking the grip, like you're taking both of your hands and you want to just choke the crap out of the grip of the pistol. Alright, that's how tight of a grip that you've got to have. And, you know, at first she was teacupping it. So we got her off of that, because that's a big recipe for inaccuracy right there and lack of control. Taught her how to put her thumbs on the pistol and how to properly grip it and how to get a nice high grip so that she can control recoil and keep the bore down as low as possible. MMPs are good. MMPs have a relatively low bore axis, and so if you get a nice high grip on the gun, you're going to be able to control it nicely and easily. I also, racking the slide. Hey, at first, she had a hard time racking the slide. Now, this is something that really irritates me every time I hear this. Oh, I don't know if my wife or my girlfriend, you know, should have a Shield or a Glock 43 or an XDS or something like that, because she can't rack the slide. Folks, there are very few exceptions. But anybody can rack a slide on these guns and chamber around. Okay, few exceptions. I understand. Maybe you've had surgery. Maybe you have a slight disability. So you're the exception. She told me she had rotator cuff surgery in one of her shoulders. Her left shoulder, I believe it was. I had her doing it left-handed and right-handed, racking the slide and chambering around with an M&P shield, left-handed and right-handed. And when I taught her the proper technique, she could do it. She didn't have a problem. The issue is most people don't have the proper technique. They don't use the proper method. I can't tell you on an audio podcast how to do it. If you just get a hold of a reputable trainer and find out. In fact, you know what I'll do? I'm going to do a video. I'm going to do a video on this and put it on my YouTube channel. But talk to an accomplished competition shooter. Talk to a defensive shooting instructor, somebody that knows what they're doing. They'll teach you how to properly rack the slide and chamber around on a semi-automatic pistol. You don't have to settle for a revolver, because you can't rack the slide on a semi-automatic pistol. And I proved that today. Even a small gun like the Shield that has a pretty stiff recoil spring, at first she could not do it, but when I helped her with the proper technique, I showed her how to get her body into it and how to use the upper body strength that she had instead of using her finger and wrist strength, she was able to do it. And she was able to do it pretty easily after I showed her the correct way to do it. So please, don't settle for not being able to rack the slide on your semi-automatic, even small semi-automatic gun, until you've had the training. Or unless you've got, like I said, some kind of a medical disability or reason that won't allow you to do it. There are exceptions to everything. I understand that. Now, she was deadly accurate. Wow. And her husband and I were kind of surprised because, well, he wasn't. He knew that she was an accurate shooter. Obviously, he's had her out shooting before and figured that out. You know what? I wanted to see her shoot without me even going over proper stance and proper sight alignment. And once I saw her shoot about 10 rounds, I really realized that I didn't need to spend a lot of time on that, because she already had that figured out. I think she fired, well, the first time she fired that shield in front of me, I think she shot 8 rounds. And like 6 of those rounds were inside about 1 inch group at about 7 yards. So I probably couldn't do a whole lot better than that with her gun. So I'm like, okay, she's got that accuracy down. I can kind of breeze through this part. She did not have a problem at all in the entire 3-hour lesson with accuracy. Wow. She's accurate. And if she's listening to this, or her husband's listening to this right now, tell her I was quite impressed with her accuracy. Way to go. It was a good lesson, good class. I thought it was good and beneficial for both. There's nothing like getting somebody to work with you privately for 3 hours. I mean, that's just the best kind of training that you can get. And it was fun for me, the instructor, to do it. It's really nice to be able to work with like 2 or 3 people privately and basically customize the lesson, customize the class to their needs. And the last thing I want to talk about as far as the lesson I gave, we talked about concealed carry methods that I use, methods that I see other people use, the types of holsters to use and to stay away from, the types of belts to use or to stay away from, the types of holsters to purchase if you're not going to wear a belt. There are holsters out there that work better in the situation where you're not going to wear a belt. So we covered all that, the type of pistol to carry, the size of the pistol to carry, the advantages and disadvantages of small guns. I let her shoot my M&P 2.0 compact and my Glock 19 and compare that to her Shield and her husband's Walther PPS M2. She definitely understood how much easier it is to shoot the larger guns, but then again, more difficult to carry. She mentioned that she wants to be able to defend herself at home. Well, you know, if it's a home defense gun, I strongly recommend the M&P 2.0 compact or the Glock 19s, guns of that size, even full-size M&Ps or full-size Glock 17s for home defense. For concealed carry, for most people, not so much. Especially people who are new to concealed carry, they want to have a smaller gun. And I've always said, and I'll wrap up this segment by saying this again, even if you have to downsize your gun, do that. If it's going to make you carry your gun more, then I think that's the best thing to do. Downsize your gun. It's better to have a gun than not have a gun. And if you buy a gun too large for concealed carry, you're not going to want to carry it. And you're not going to have it when you need it the most. And even if you do have a hard time racking the slide, even if, let's say, you have a Shield or a Glock 43 or an XDS or something like that that's a little bit difficult to rack the slide, that's not that big of a deal, folks. As I've always said, the chances of you reloading in a gunfight are extremely low, extremely slim if you're a civilian. The likelihood of you reloading, it's just not there, folks. It's been proven that the odds of you having to reload are not that high. So keep your pistol loaded and don't worry too much about racking the slide, because the only time you're going to have to rack the slide is if you have to reload or clear a malfunction. And hopefully if you have a good quality pistol, malfunctions won't be that much of an issue either with a good quality pistol and good quality ammo. All right, so there's some thoughts right there. And got another topic coming up, probably either an interview coming up or maybe a couple of listener contributions. Stay tuned. Well, I hope you enjoyed both of those segments from my vehicle. And, you know, as I mentioned, that's usually when I have a lot of really good quality time to think and to think about what I want to say and how I want to say it to you. I really appreciate you listening. I want to announce that I hit a milestone with this show. I hit a big goal that I've been wanting to hit for years and years and years, 5 million downloads. Thank you, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. It doesn't mean that 5 million different people have listened to the show. It means that 5 million times an episode of my show was downloaded. Sometimes it might be one person that downloaded several episodes at one time. Probably it's closer to about 3.5 million who are what they call unique downloads, but it has been downloaded and it has been accessed and downloaded 5 million times. I'm just kind of blown away by that. Thank you very much. You know, it's been eight and a half years now since I've been doing this show. 453 episodes as of now. I did not think it was going to last this long, to be quite truthful with you. I did not think that I was going to be doing it this long and have the listener base this long to be able to keep doing it. And as long as I've got a pretty decent listener base, I'll probably keep doing this every 2 weeks, twice a month, on the 1st and 15th of each month is working out very well for me. On April 1st, I've got some real good material for you. I'll say it in advance, Happy Easter, because Easter's coming up April 1st. When that show releases, I probably will also have an Easter message in there for you, to all my Christian friends. Happy Easter. And if you're not one of my Christian friends, if you have another faith, I just still encourage you to enjoy the fact that others consider it a holy day and give them respect, the respect as they hopefully that they give you if you share another faith during what your holy days are. Also, if you like what you hear on this show, if I help you out, please consider supporting the show. Many of you use my Amazon store to make your Amazon purchases. Thank you. That helps. You don't have to spend any extra money doing that. Handgunworld.com. Go to the Amazon store first before you make each purchase. Ben Branham and I work very hard. Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. We work very hard on the Shooters Club videos. I believe we have now over 70 videos. Very educational videos, exclusive content that you really, I don't think you can find anywhere else, all in one area. And we certainly don't cover it on our podcasts or our public YouTube channels. So that's only $8 a month, $75 a year. We'd appreciate your support that way. Also, Bob's Bullet Points. Don't forget about Bob's Bullet Points. A lot of you watch YouTube, and I don't know about you, but I have a hard time watching really long 30 minutes to 1 hour YouTube videos. I don't have the attention span nor the time for that. I keep my Bob's Bullet Points down to 5 to 7 minutes in length, but I pick a topic and I go with it and I stay on that topic for the entire length. So check it out. When you go to YouTube, just search Bob's Bullet Points or Handgun World. Each of them will get you there, and I'd appreciate it if you'd also put some comments, subscribe to my channel that way. Don't forget to find me on Facebook, Handgun World, or Handgun World on Twitter. Folks, thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Remember, if you're doing all the talking, you are only learning what you already know. Remember to read your Bible every day, shoot straight, and shoot safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.